It's Wednesday, July 4th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 270 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
This is Julia.
This is John.
Alrighty. Let's kick this one straight off with some gaming topics. No announcements or anything interesting like that. First thing we're going to talk about is interrogation in games.
Torture porn. Skip it.
Alright.
This topic is because I want advice. Every time this has come up in game, I don't feel like I've done it right as a GM. Every game I run...
Because you allowed it?
Well, every game I run, I agree. The players have found a way to capture someone and start asking questions. And I don't know how as a GM to make that flow. I don't know how to make the guy give them the information they want and have it come out reasonably, or keep the information without coming off as being...
They roll intimidate, you roll his will save,
exactly.
And then you tell them what they found out.
That's okay. What I believe.
Now,
I want to role play it, though.
Role play what?
And then I take his fingernails off. Ha!
Like, this is the oldest convention in D&D role playing.
Even if the GM... Even if the character is willing to talk, how do you make that conversation reasonable?
All right, so let's back up here and do the setup. Wayne, as you said, the issue here, players capture an NPC of some kind. They want information out of this NPC. And the game master, of course, wants to make them have to jump through some degree of hurdles to get to that information.
And this happens.
No, I really don't.
This happens a lot in my games because I'm willing to let the players do whatever they want. I give a lot of leeway. And because because of that, it's pretty common for my characters to be able to take the bad guy and start interrogating
him. Wayne games are very PC-driven, and I like that.
Yeah.
I'll give a sort of a confession here, which is I fell into the torture porn thing once, and let me explain why it happened. When you take somebody prisoner and you start exposing them to torment, they are going to talk. Now, I realize there's been all this stuff about torture where a lot of times people will say whatever they think you want to hear to make the torture stop. There's a question about how accurate the information is, blah, blah, blah. But if they have information and then telling you the accurate truth will get you to leave them alone, everything I have seen says they will talk. Everybody has a breaking point. I was playing in a game under a game master who is not on this show, so I'm not bashing on anybody affiliated with Fear the Boot. And we captured a guy, and this was a World of Darkness game, and this guy was in some cult that was going to summon some vampire god. I don't remember the details, but this guy was in the know on something really bad. So we said, look, we've captured this guy fair and square. We know he knows the information. We want that information. And the game master's like, well, he's not telling you. Okay, I'm going to roll some social skills here. He's not telling you. And at this point, I, as a player, am getting pissed off and frustrated because the game master, in my mind, is being...
Stubborn,
yeah. I was looking for a slightly more...
He didn't give you what you wanted and you got mad, in other words.
More than that. He did not give me that which, in my mind, I ought to have gotten.
Yeah, you were entitled to it.
Precisely.
By the role.
Being
what
obstructive.
I had earned. Exactly. He's being obstructive. He's just obfuscating. At that point, I got pissed off. So it's like, fine, out come the pliers. And when the pliers didn't work, out comes the bandsaw. And it just started degrading from there, where I kept describing increasingly depraved acts, descending into the torture porn, which, by the way, I am not supportive of as a method of roleplay, because of the fact that the game master would not deal fairly with the consequences of the situation. And that's where I put the beginning of the problem. And Wayne, I have to give you props coming into this topic, because you're saying, I want to know how to handle this. I want to know how to give that information. Whereas most GMs I've dealt with, the torture porn ensues for one of two reasons. Reason one is you have someone in the group who's just a sick bastard. They get off on pretending to torment another living creature. The only advice I have for you with that sort of person is get away from them.
They're all over tabletop role playing, so good luck.
The other circumstances comes up under is when the game master is unwilling to give the player something that they have fairly earned.
Yeah, and that's not my issue at all. In my case, if the players have managed to defeat the bad guy without killing them and gotten to the interrogation point, the bad guy doesn't want to be tortured. He's willing to give up the information generally because the NPC actually is a little bit more nuanced to the point that he doesn't want to be tortured. He's willing to give some information before that.
Yeah.
And it just never seems natural to me.
Well, and
that conversation always is forced.
And I remember watching a documentary about pilots during the first Gulf War. And there was a downed American pilot, and he was describing his experience having been captured by the Iraqi army after ejecting. They took him into a room and they tortured him about all kinds of stuff. He basically, after enough time, you know, he held out, used his training, whatever. But look, human beings have a breaking point, and he talked and he told them whatever they wanted to know. And he was being led back to his cell. And he just felt like dog crap. You know, he just sold out his brothers and sisters in arms. He, you know, was like, I wasn't strong enough. He was beating himself up. And he passed by a British guy. And the British guy, without even saying a word to him prior to this, just said, it's okay, mate. We all talked. That's the reality here. If you do enough bad things to someone, they will do whatever it's going to take to get it to stop. Presuming you're not talking about something like a golem where you cannot induce it into a state of panic or pain.
So instead of role-playing 4 hours of thumbscrews, why not just like tell your GM that?
Or just roll an intimidate check.
My advice, assuming you have a fair game master and reasonably minded players, is for the players to say, okay, we've got this guy. We want to know what he knows. We're going to put the squeeze on him.
So your advice basically is avoid the whole in-character role-playing of it and just go to, here are the questions we want answered, and have the GM basically run down
it out.
Abstraction.
I mean, look,
I think that's a good way to do it. I just think that sometimes it can get just a little too gruesome. Now, granted, I'm a girl, but I really don't want to hear about it.
Well, characters usually don't require, I guess that's the problem. The characters don't require the torture to start talking to a degree. I mean, they'll tell more, of course, if they get tortured.
Right.
But usually they're willing to tell a certain amount more than the players know before any torture comes in. I've always tried to keep that in character. It sounds like the best way to do it, maybe to just abstract that then.
Well, what we've done in the past is just roll an intimidate check. If we get it, then we get to say we succeeded in torturing him to give us this information without going through all of the description.
Yeah, remember that scene where Aragorn and Legolas captured that orc and then like fried his balls and he told them all about Sauron's plans? Because I don't. Why the hell is this part of the D&D tradition?
Well, let's not just focus on D&D because I mean, we're talking about this.
The tabletop RPG tradition.
Well, we're talking about the Scottics of Dresden.
This came up because of Dresden. You guys captured basically a god that had created a physical manifestation of himself.
Right. We
and you guys
homunculus.
Are questioning him. And torture didn't really need to come up. But it was a matter of that whole interaction to me didn't feel natural.
Right.
Like the way the character talked to me didn't feel natural.
I'm with Julie on this one. I mean, if you look at like combat, we tend to describe a little more than the game calls for. We try to do more and say, I swing with my sword. Oh, 18, I hit. We try to kind of talk about, okay, well, he comes at me like this and I slash him like that. And we may
describe
something.
Because it makes the game more fun.
Precisely. But here's what we don't get into. We may say, I kind of stick him in the gut, but we leave it at that. We don't talk about, well, I drive my blade in with glee and it separates the fatty tissue and then the muscle layer and then it goes into his intestines where I mean that's just sick. Okay, there's a point it doesn't need to go to. And I would say the exact same thing about interrogation. I think something a game master needs to look at is, what does this person know? Ask the players, what types of things are you trying to find out from this person? Because that may lead into the thought I gave before, which is sometimes when tortured, people will say whatever they think you want to hear to stop torturing them, which means they may give you false information because they don't know the real information. So say, what is the questions you're going to ask? And finally, how far are you willing to go to get this information? Is this going to be a good cop, bad cop psychology routine? Are the thrumsters coming? I don't need to be graphic, but just give me an understanding. And then based on that, you come up with some pluses and minuses. The players roll their social skills. The NPC rolls his willpower or whatever the right role is for that system. And based on that, they learn X number of things.
I guess the really hard part for me is that in the example that generated this topic, the one where I wanted help with it, the NPC in question, while the players were questioning him, interrogating him, he was hanging on trying to get information out of the players as well. So in the situation here, he wanted to know how the players knew he was even there to catch him. There was never any risk of that NPC. You know, the physical form of him could easily be destroyed.
Right.
But the actual nature of it, he was somewhere else generating this physical form.
And that certainly needs to figure into it, because you could have an NPC who is tougher than the average bear, has been trained to deal with torture. Once again, everybody has their breaking point, but maybe he's better than most.
Well, so in this case, he was trying to get information back.
Or possibly is even playing a mind game where, in addition to the information they're giving up, they may be trying to play you for information. And all this needs to be figured into the various roles. And the game master may say, hey, look, I need a 2d6 roll from you, or a 4f roll in the case of Fudge from you, and not explain why, and work that out. Now, Wayne, I guess to your point, though, correct me if I'm wrong here, so I don't speak on your behalf, but it sounds like part of the issue is, since he was trying to get information back, you had to role play out the interaction. Is that what you're stuck on?
In my mind, it was, because I didn't want to do a role to see if you guys gave something up. I wanted to actually role play it to see if you gave something up in the conversation.
That's a fair point. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say you've got that scenario where you need to role play it out, not because of the interrogation, but because of the game, the interrogation subject is playing back. Now what?
I still don't think you have to be graphic about it. I don't think that, like, screws and nails and cutting off people's fingers or whatever, I just don't think that still has to come into play. I still think you could do skill checks and get there. I really do.
Give me an example. Let's say you're in that situation. Let's say you were playing Dresden with us.
Mm-hmm.
We capture this person. You saw Avengers, right?
Right.
Okay, now I'm going to give a scene from Avengers, which should not be a massive spoiler, okay?
You're thinking the same thing I
was. There's a scene in there where it's right at the start of the movie where Black Widow's getting interrogated and she's actually playing them to get information out of them. All right, it's pretty spoiler free because it does not figure into the plot. But the point is that she's kind of manipulating them through the line of questioning to find out things from them. I agree with you, you don't have to get so graphic as down to the thumb screws and such, but if you're going to keep any kind of a consistent narrative to the questions, counter questions, the games both sides are playing, I mean, you do have to describe the actions to some extent. You can't just say, well, I interrogate him. Well, while you're interrogating him, he says blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, 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 I don't think you get it. I had a sock in his mouth and was hitting him with a blowtorch on the back. Do you see what I'm saying? Where, depending on the approach, and I'm with John in that I don't want this to descend into, as we keep calling it, torture porn.
Yeah, it always does.
Exactly. But how would you do that sort of back and forth where you need that detail without getting perverse about it?
Well, and the other problem is, I, as a GM, I'm not trying to obscure anything. I want the players to get information out of that character, but I want to give it to them in character. I don't want to just give them an exposition dump. And that's one of my biggest problems, is what ends up happening, the NPC gives the exposition dump. Here's a couple paragraphs of information for you.
You know,
it doesn't flow logically.
Here's a suggestion that I think could solve this, because it seems like the problem comes from two sides. On the one hand, you have game masters where the depth of their game, everything they have, is based purely on the secrets they're holding, and therefore they want to obfuscate as much as they can. On the flip side, you get players who in some cases get off on doing this kind of twisted crap. For a moment, let's assume you've dealt with those two issues.
Yeah, lucky. In our game, we have neither.
Yeah, and I've played with both. But let's say you've got a game master who's going to be fair with the information and players who aren't going to get off on it. I think you could play a different kind of interrogation. Not necessarily get quite so graphic as we're taking pliers to his teeth and thumbnails, but say something to the effect of, okay, we have this guy. I put a gun to his head and say, start talking. That's not so graphic.
Yeah, I think that's acceptable.
We do the roles, and out of that, he confesses something, but in return, maybe he says, you've got me, I'm so-and-so, but how did you know, or whatever. And the game master, by giving that information, takes away the sense among the players, which is what I went through in that World of Darkness game, where it's like, I have to escalate this to get your attention. All I can say is I put a gun to his head. We tie him to a chair and we don't give him any food or water for a day or two. I don't have to get to the level of the pliers and bandsaws to get your attention about how much we're going to mess with this guy.
Yeah, and I guess one thing I could do that I haven't done is just actually tell the players, hey, I'm willing to give you information. This doesn't seem to be going as well in character as I thought it was.
Right.
Here's the information that he's giving you. I guess I could just be honest with the players and say, hey, this isn't working well for me. the scene doesn't seem to be going well, but I'm not trying to obscure information. What are you trying to get from him?
Would that be too much metagaming?
No, think, not at all. I think it's perfect.
I think it depends. Personally, as a GM, I would roll myself to see how good the NPC is going to be against the players. If he sucked at a roll, he's not going to be able to get anything out of him. So I guess I come from that approach where if he rolls wonderfully, then maybe he's more deceitful about it. Personally, that's how I would deal with it, is roll myself behind a little screen so they can't see, and so I can try to get what I want out of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I just was trying to do it all, like I said, in character.
Yeah, in Dresden, it's way easy to do.
And that's why I always do it, whether it be a Pathfinder game, because I've had this in Pathfinder, I've had this in Dresden. It's something that keeps coming up. I have never been happy with any interrogation scene that I've GM'd.
I think one of the things that Dresden allows, coming from the Fudge/Fate system, that not every game is going to allow, is the fact that you can also play off aspects.
Mm-hmm.
That you could just throw down a chip and say, look, I have the aspect of, I'm a really scary dude, therefore, let's just cut to the chase. As opposed to, let's say, a game like Mech Warrior or a game like World of Darkness, where you might have some kind of perk like that, but in all probability, it's skill checks. With the skill check, sometimes comes the question of, well, what exactly are you willing to do? It strikes me that the best thing you can do is just both sides be fair and reasonable and keep it as abstracted as you can. Give it a little color, give it a little depth, just like combat. Describe your actions a little more than I interrogate, just like I'd say describe it better than I swing my sword. But you don't have to get just hideously 1980s slasher movie with it.
I guess that maybe just something I need to work at as a GM is being willing to abstract more. I tend to want everything to happen in character. Maybe I need to let go more and actually abstract some of these things.
Well, another way you can do it, and I just know this because I've had it happen in two games. One was a module, one wasn't, was describing just the atmosphere in general. You wake up laying on a table with all this crazy stuff around you. You don't have to get to that thumbnail stuff. You can just be like, oh, there's all these implements around, so obviously something's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, I can tell you as a person, if I wake up and I look over and see thumbnails, I'm singing.
Well,
I'm talking.
It's one of
what
the,
do you want to know? I'll tell you.
Exactly.
One of the first rules of torture, once again, real life, you show them the implements.
Right.
You start by describing to them what you're going to do to freak them out psychologically, because what they're doing to themselves mentally is worse than the actual pain you can induce.
Exactly.
And so you start off by showing them the implements of the torture. Actually, it was not at all together a great movie, but one of the best torture scenes I think I've ever seen was in the Punisher movie. Not the most recent one, but the one that came before that, where he catches a guy who's kind of this mousy little guy working for the bad guys, and he wants him to believe he's being tortured. And so he makes this big scene out. He like chains him by his wrists up to the ceiling, makes this big scene out of like lighting a blowtorch and lighting a cigarette off his blowtorch.
Blindfolds him,
walks around to the guy's back, puts the blowtorch on a stake, and puts a popsicle to his back. Because if you think about it, extreme cold feels like extreme heat in a weird sort of way. So all he's doing is he's cooking a steak so the guy hears the sizzling and smells the burning flesh, but then is just running a popsicle slowly down his back. Yeah. And the guy freaks himself out. Seems like a bird.
He describes in him that severe burns sometimes feel like freezing cold.
Yeah, until he just psychs the guy out. He doesn't do a damn thing to him. The guy is completely fine. He's not hurt one bit, but he nonetheless is able to freak him out psychologically.
I've always wondered why people don't, in the matter of interrogation, just get the subject drunk.
Or drugged.
Yeah, half the people out there will just start spilling if they're drugged or drunk or something along that lines. You don't need the torture.
Yeah, all of my clients.
And I do think, in fairness, because some people may bring this up, I do think, in fairness, you do have to also deal with the possibility of false information. That either because of the panic, as I said before, where they're just saying what they think you want to hear to leave them alone, or if you're using something like an intoxicant, they may be mentally confused. It is possible that wrong information could come out of it. But I think...
And hell, my NPCs may not even know the correct information.
Right.
Depending who the NPC is that you're interrogating, they may have been fed false information that they're willing to give you.
Or have no information at all. And you say, where's the bad guy base? And they don't know. But you basically say, well, we're going to keep the pressure on him until he talks. So finally, he just gives you an address because he has no idea. And I think that's something the game master needs to take into account. Now, depending on the system, you might be able to account for that either through the primary role, like an unexpected success. Is this guy giving misinformation? You could deal with it by knowing in advance what this NPC does or doesn't know. You could even make a second set of roles to basically say, okay, here's your ability to interrogate this guy. Now let's make a second roll to see how good you are at discerning truth from lie, whether that's intentional misleading or simply panic or confusion of the moment.
That's one thing for a sense motive check. It's always a matter of, does this person believe what they're telling you? Right. And I will always couch it in that phrase. I will never say this is absolute fact. I will always say they believe what they're saying if they believe
right.
it. Because they may not have the right information.
And if you've got the sociopath at the table, if you've got someone where they're really getting into the description of the hideous things they're doing to someone, I think it's incumbent upon the group as a whole, not just the game master, to say, look, first of all, this is not the kind of game we want to run. You need to back off that. You can just say you're taking him down to the basement, doing horrible things, make some die rolls, we get the point. And I think it's also incumbent upon the game master to build a level of trust to say, look, based on the die rolls, I'm not going to jack you around. If you roll it, you've got it. I'm not going to cling to my secrets because of the fact that my plot should be bigger than the secrets some NPC knows.
Well, let's face it. Usually the group won't question the person. I've seen this happen in game, and even though everyone at the table was uncomfortable, it really fell on the GM to be the one to say something, because even though you would expect everyone else to, you kind of hope everyone else says something. I haven't seen it happen.
Well, I think in the case of the Dresden game, we didn't understand who it was we had.
That was definitely the case.
We thought we just had some random bomb-throwing terrorist. We didn't realize this was the homunculus yep. of a god.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted that to be in character.
In the World of Darkness game?
I wanted that
game,
to be a big reveal for you
guys. In the
guys.
World of Darkness game, we knew we had one of the head cultists from this group. We knew damn well who he was and what he knew. Whereas in this case, we didn't have any idea. Yep. We just thought he was just some random mad bomber and therefore were prepared to dispose of him.
Yeah, my group always keeps somebody alive in questions. It never fails. There's always somebody alive and we always question.
Julia, how does your group handle it? Because John, Wayne, and I pretty much all play in this exact same group.
The way I talked about, we never go into detail. Like I said, the only two times we ever went into any detail was through a module where we were tortured in a Serenity game. And all that did was open our players up to each other. So we had to give all of our secrets and our backgrounds through torture because they were all in the same room
with
us.
How graphic was that torture
script? Not very.
Okay.
All they said was electrocution. And then, I mean, we didn't even really get into telling each other what was going on.
I think that's another place where the trust has to come in is if the situation's reversed and you are being interrogated, if the roles get thrown out, the game master should be able to turn to you and say, you have to tell the truth. You failed your will check. You can't lie.
Exactly.
You have to tell the truth.
That's what we do.
And the trust should be there that the player is going to
give it all.
Give the truth.
Yeah, and we generally try to do like a good cop, bad cop, where we kind of argue a little bit, I guess. But we decide, okay, well, I'm going to try to intimidate him. If it doesn't work, can you sweet talk him? Because we generally have somebody who's a big hulky barbarian, and then I'm usually the talky one because I'm a girl. And so they are intimidating. If it doesn't work, I try to sweet talk the information out of them, and that's just about as far as it gets.
Next topic I want to cover is characters that don't quite fit in.
Like you.
Yes, like me. And this is something that I noticed two games back, and it started to bug me last game. And when it's starting to bug the person who's doing it, it's fairly safe to presume it's bugging other people at the
table.
Well,
can I get clarification? Is it you as power level or you as personality character-wise?
Good question. Good question. In this case, I'm not talking about power level, because that's relatively easy to fix.
Not even personality, because the personality actually was very interesting mix into the group. That worked well,
okay.
too.
And all of those are possibilities. I mean, you can have a power level imbalance. In my mind, that's pretty easy to fix. Change the damn character. Sometimes you get into a fight with the person because they don't want to see their characters being overpowered. But the solution, at least in concept, is pretty simple. If the person's not fitting in personality-wise, well, this goes back to start with a group template, discuss these things, and if the character turns out in execution different than on paper, you pull a person aside and say, hey, you know, your character's not fitting in, too much of a loner, too much of a douchebag, too whatever it is the rest of the party's not. But in this case, let me give a little bit of a backstory here to kind of explain what came up with my character. And I want to explain why I made this character the way I did, and how it has turned out in a way I didn't exactly expect. Wayne's running a dressing game, something we've mentioned several times. Because of work, I decided to see the GM chair. If you're hearing booms, this goes back to it's the 3rd of July, and everybody around here is nuts at holidays, so...
Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and we are again fighting for our freedom.
Oh, yeah.
Not from tyranny or persecution, but from annihilation.
Is it midnight yet?
No.
No.
I might just throw that DVD in tomorrow, John.
I might just throw that DVD in the second we're done recording.
I have that DVD sitting out there, so we can do that. But with the deleted scenes and everything.
That was the first movie I saw in theaters more than once.
Really? Okay. So anyway.
David!
Because of work being so crazy and some other stuff in my life, I stepped back from GME and said, Wayne, why don't you just run this dressing game? Which they had only been running on Sundays I wasn't there, which thanks to work was fairly
which
often.
Which all was all of them.
Yes. Yeah. And so I was making a new character into an existing group. So I came in and basically said, okay, walk me through the city you've built, which is a big part of Dresden. Yeah. Give me a sense of the group. What's everyone playing? And I was trying to figure out, what am I going to play?
Yeah, and I think we did a good job of explaining the city. I don't think we got into the characters enough for you before you decided.
I think that was part of it, but I'm not going to put this fully on anyone else. I think I made a mistake, and here's the mistake I made.
And also, me as a GM, I am willing to go with anything the players want. I am a very open GM that is ready to just work and adjust.
Right.
Based on anything the players want. I want the players to be happy coming into the game.
So my first thought was, well, I'll just play the Bible Totem, Uzi Totem, Hunter. And it's like, no, I've done that.
And besides, we already had a Bible Toter in the group.
And so my second thought was, well, maybe I'll play it from a different angle of where I'm more of like pastor of a church, more pacifist, still working by faith, but not by the gun.
Yeah. And all of this we could have worked into the game.
But once again, it's like, no, too close to me things I played.
And I will be honest, that is what I expected you to play, and I had notes ready for you. Here are organizations that fit that character.
Yeah.
If you want to be part of this organization, I will give you the full chain of
support. I was even thinking I might have played the pastor of Beth's church. And so my next thought was, well, maybe I'll play some kind of like intellectual sort of mage, you know, like a mage or order of Hermes. And it's like, no, I play that all the time too. So I decided to settle on something I have never played anything like before, which is I took the concept of a water dragon from Taoist mythology, specifically from Journey to the West, basically said, I'm going to play a neglected water dragon, the Dragon of the Mississippi River, which I believe we mentioned in a prior episode. Now, here's where things get different. This character has a little bit of trouble fitting in, really, for two big reasons. One, there is a lack of shared history. The group has a certain way of getting things done. When a problem pops up, there's this understood culture of this guy does this, this guy does this, this girl does that, this girl does that, and all of it kind of fits together into a cogent culture of solving problems.
Yes, and by the very nature of the system, these characters all knew each other ahead of time.
Right. I am now on the outside of that, coming up with my own sorts of solutions. Problem two is I didn't fully understand the mythos of Dresden.
Yeah, the idea is that everything you've described, that would be a part of the Never Never. That is a distant part of the Never Never. It's not as close to reality as what, you know, everyone else sees. It is further in, but it is still part of the Never Never.
Which is not what I presumed. When I came into it, I had more of a World of Darkness sort of mindset. Where in World of Darkness, they try to accommodate everyone and everything. They basically say, well, it just kind of all juggles into the reality together. We just kind of presuppose that everybody's belief system is true on some level. There's a heaven, there's a hell, but there's also a Jade Court. There's also Nirvana, and so on and so forth.
And to a degree, that's kind of what Dresden does, except all of that exists in some corner of the Never Never.
Yeah, you can literally pull anything out of the Never Never if you really wanted to. In one of the books, he fights a caterpillar monster. Yeah. I mean,
but it is in the Never Never.
It is in the Never Never.
And apparently they also have in there things like the Jade Court vampires or whatever, which Jim Butcher is not yet really developed.
No.
And so
I don't know if he'll have time to, honestly.
I'm playing this corner of the setting that, one, is not real well developed to begin with, and two, I made the decision, not fully appreciating what the Never Never was, that I was basically going to run, there's parallel realities. You have the Never Never, which is kind of the Feyland. This would be, if you're playing World of Darkness, this is where the changelings come from. However, in addition to that, there is also another plane of existence and another hierarchy which leads to the place where the positive and negative divide and the Jade Emperor sits. Yeah. And this is not the Never Never. This is just another realm of existence that sits in parallel to our own.
The only thing was that was a not an understanding, which may fall partially on me of not explaining what the Never Never actually is, because it wasn't just fairy. It is everything else.
And I think it was something Chad said without meaning to throw me off, that threw me off, which is he said, oh yeah, I come from the Never Never and I'm a fae creature and I'm under the thumb of this fae court. I don't know, Seelie or Unseelie or whatever. And there's all the, and he kept saying fae, 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 fae. So I just assumed, oh, the Never Never must be where the fae come from. So there must be other planes of existence. So this is where I'm from. And what? Exactly. Yeah.
And because the fae are just
The fae are the closest to mortal creatures.
Right.
So they're the part where if a mortal goes into the Never Never, it's most likely they're going into the fae area,
right?
Because the fae is what's closest to the mortal world. And, yeah, but it's not all that's there.
Yeah, they have to travel pretty far to get to the Jade section and so on.
And so what ends up happening is we have now competing mythoi.
Meta-wise, from my perspective, when you guys go to the Jade Court in the game, you're in a corner of the Never Never. It's just deeper into the Never Never, and your character may not even realize that it's connected to the Never Never.
Maybe to you it seems that way, but to me it's like we have, once again, two parallel mythoi. Within this game, Chad can drag us to the Never Never, or I can call upon the North Star or something like that to come and take me on a cloud and whisk me away to the Jade Court, where we have some kind of parlay with this guy or that guy. We talked to the guy last time who has the 8-trigram furnace. I forget his name.
And I think part of the problem was I let you describe everything we were going into as we went into it. And basically, I let you run with it for a couple of reasons from a GM standpoint. I was getting two things out of it. One, I know you prefer to GM.
Right.
You would prefer to GM over being a player. And for me, I was giving you something as a player that you would have a big control over. I was letting you describe it because I was giving you what, as a player, I thought you would want.
Which is cool.
The other part of that, though, was I wanted to work in a way that I could reveal some secrets that Beth was dealing with, that I was able to work into what you were doing. I didn't have a good way to do that, so I was taking advantage of that situation for two things. I think I let it get a little out of control.
And that's what I think happened last game. How it felt to me was like, it's gone from I'm defining my corner of the universe to it really felt to me like the other players were tagging along as we adventured throughout my mythos. I'll say, John, that was going to be my thing. So I want to toss this over to you now. From a player perspective, how has this all, from two games ago to last game, however many games I've been in this, how has this felt to you from the concept being pitched to execution to where I personally feel it went wrong last game?
Yeah, the perception is among at least me that this has gone from a Dresden game with a Journey to the West flavor to a Journey to the West game with a Dresden flavor. You have usurped the narration as well as the direction of your own PC, and it's just sort of out there, and me and Chad are waiting outside of the Jade Dragon Palace playing under the bridge and singing to the crowds while the story sort of happens around us. We are bewildered, and I think the GM is bewildered at points because he doesn't know what the hell this dragon crap is.
There were two things I was trying to get out of that, and one of them was give Dan his bone as a player, let him get what he wants out of a GM. But again, I think I let it run too long.
Well, I think there's a couple ways to do it. I mean, the Never Never can be opened anywhere.
Right.
So you can do very small segments of it, I think. And that's what we've done in the past, is instead of diving into an entire world of one of the characters, you take little bits here and there. We went into the Never Never to get to this place that is the plot. And in passing, we saw this rather than diving into it completely. That way you're not focusing the entire story around one character, especially when you do have something like Never Never that you can do that with. Having just little bits and pieces of it works just as good.
I think something else that threw me off a little bit here, and then I want to kick this back to John again with a slightly different question, was the first time we went to the Never Never, the way it was described to me reminded me very much of the secret back alleys and fae places from Hellboy 2, where it's like it's a distortion of the real world. It's kind of like a magical reflection of the real world. The Jade Court is like Taoist heaven. it is not a reflection of the real world. It is a different place entirely. Right.
Yeah.
And that part of that was where you guys were going in. Because you chose to go in at the bridge, I already knew what the Never Never looked like at the bridge. If you'd have gone in somewhere else, you might not have got that impression.
Right.
Well, in the Dresden universe, there is the Undertown, which does have some of the creepy things, but nothing crazy happens until you're in the Never Never. You don't get caterpillar monsters. Mm-hmm. But you could have some humanized face hanging out in Undertown, which in the Dresden universe is just under Chicago in the Undercity.
Right.
One thing that was fun for me was when they went into the Never Never, they ran into an area of St. Louis that looked like St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of people, it was all of the goblins in that area had taken over. And they were doing goblin businessmen kind of things.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a fun thing. Because I've been playing with goblins since the beginning. But that may have also led to this misconception of the Never Never is just a twisted version. No, it was you guys went through.
It can be
a twisted. You guys went through a twisted version.
So, John, what would your solution be to this? What do you think would get the game back on track and get your sense of place in the universe realigned?
Give narrative control back to Wayne and away from you. Not to put too fine a point on it.
Be more specific. I'm not disagreeing, but more specific.
The whole part about, like, we're going to take the artifact and I'm going to take it to the Jade Court. And I'm going to tell you and the PCs what the Jade Court is like and what the NPCs are like there. And, you know, I'm going to dictate when you need to roll perception to see this, that, and the other and notice this particular social convention. All these things you did in the last game would have been A+ double awesome if you were the GM of the campaign, but you're not.
Well, and that was the fun thing is I threw in a lot of subtleties that not everyone caught.
Right.
So there were a lot of subtleties where I was taking control, but I did give too much control over to Dan.
I was saying that is the one thing for the listeners at home who weren't there. Wayne actually deferred that to me. I did not take it. It was handed.
Well, I don't think you were mean about it malicious.
That clarification was only for listeners. Yep. Yeah. So continue.
That goes back to my point one of what I was trying to get out of it. I wanted to give Dan something because he prefers the GM as area. And I've learned a lesson out of that. I let it go on way too long and I gave too much.
Well, and honestly, you obviously don't know the Dresden File universe that well. It may have been better maybe in somebody's hands who's read the books and knows the difference between all of it because then, like I said, you could do pieces of it rather than the entirety. Better.
That, I think, is the criticism I would levy that is not really useful to us now that we're two games deep into Dragonland. But I think, Dan, if you had crafted a character that was more rooted in the Dresden mythos than in something else entirely, you and Wayne may have been able to play off each other a little more productively. You would have been an active and vibrant player character, which is good, without being the only guy in the room that knew about the setting you were leading us to.
There is one other side issue here that we haven't hit on. After every game, I very much ask the players their opinion on the game, and I try to get the feedback out of the game. After that game, one of my thoughts was, okay, I was trying something here. I was giving Dan a lot of leeway. I gave too much. My thoughts afterwards was, okay, next game, I need to rein this in. When I give him a section, I need to not let it run on as long. I need to do more input into it. You know, so there's not that blur and confusion.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing against giving Dan leeway or giving me leeway or anybody. It's just that we have got to have a commonality of setting and a common knowledge of where we're going and why we're going there. It was awesome when it was the Knolls because we all knew what was on the table. When it's Dragonland, no one knows what the hell's going on except
Dan. I really wish when I asked that after the game, I had gotten that honest input.
Oh, I did give it to you. I told you I thought my character was out of whack.
I didn't get it from anyone else.
Okay. But I
gave it to you eventually. I don't know if it was that day or on the phone.
I did get it eventually. I wish I would have got it at that moment when I asked after the game.
I don't know if I could have put my finger on it right after it happened.
I think sometimes people need some time to digest. But in my case, I knew it was bothering me. It's like I did things in this game that I could tell just from my experience as a GM were off-putting to the other players. So, John, here's my question. What now? What do you think is the right way to reconcile this? Given the fact that now we have established within the game's truth that these parallel realities exist, because there are some plot points now that are fairly intertwined in that truth being truth.
Yeah. The Jade Court exists somewhere. You have visited it. They have a reverence for archangels, because there was an archangel involved in this as well, which was part of my, I wanted and to get a plot point out.
Whatever the name of the guys that has the 8 trigram furnace has destroyed one of the artifacts. What now? How would you bring this back together? What would, as a player, would make you comfortable? Well, so,
and part of this, as a GM, like I said, I see this as being a part of the Never Never. Is there anything I, as a GM, can do to share that idea with the players in game?
I would like to perceive the game as being back in Wayne's control, back in the Dresdenverse, and in a place where we are more or less at equal footing in terms of setting and canon awareness, as opposed to Dan knows this all and Dick tastes it. And I have no doubt that you're doing this accurately to the mythos, that you're not just wrapping this around your own player character to your own benefit. I'm not accusing you of that at all.
Right.
But moving it to somewhere where, okay, we're dealing with the White Court of Vampires. We're dealing with, you know, the Knights of the Cross. Stuff where, if we're not equal in knowledge, we're at least equal in ignorance.
Yeah.
Well, and you can easily do that, because the Jade Court vampires aren't very well talked about. So you could tie that into White Court vampires. There could be a war that you can just make up. There's ways to tie it into the Dresden universe, I think. I think it's going to take somebody who's read the books and read them very well.
Part of it is, me as a GM, I already knew where I was going with the next game. If I hadn't gotten sick over the weekend, we would have already gone through the next game, and part of it would have dealt with this exact issue.
Actually, I'm glad we didn't, because since last week turned into a bonus episode, we wouldn't have had the chance to talk about this.
But I mean, part of it is, the next game, we will be getting back into the mythos we have done all this time. I see this as, you guys took a side trip to a portion of the Never Never that you have never experienced before.
Never Never.
Didn't I say Never Never?
It was a joke.
Joke failed.
Never Never mind.
I got it.
I rolled a 1 on my joke, so go on.
I am too drunk right now for jokes like that. You guys took a side trip to a portion of the Never Never that you have never experienced. Now you have experienced that. You have destroyed one of the objects. That was a side trip that took you away from the main plot.
Yeah.
You are now back to the main game. Yeah. And that's kind of how I see it, is that was a side trip that you guys took.
Here's where I'm at. As of right now, because in my mind, now I am stressing, in my mind, this is a Dan issue. This is not a black and white objective reality. This character is so tied to the perception that the mythos of Journey to the West is real.
Right.
And is not just a sub-pocket of the Never Never. And because of some of the things that I have done to affect the plot, such as introducing Jillian, the character that I made Pat save, and all that kind of stuff.
I even threw some curves in for you on that character.
The relationships that I have described having with other local gods and local dragons, which I just completely made up, I don't know that I can reconcile his character back. I really think at this point, what I need to do until I know Dresden better, until I have a chance to read some of the Dresden books or whatever, is I probably need to ditch this character and create something that's a little bit more consistent with the
universe. I would be very comfortable with it.
Can I make a suggestion on that?
No.
And
I don't think that's necessary. I think this character fits in with the group well. It's just a matter of... I like the character thinking that it knows everything, but it actually doesn't.
I like its idiosyncrasies and how it doesn't match with the group, but we've sort of got this accidental group template of ordinary people who happen to have fallen into importance or power or degeneration or whatever within the Dresdenverse.
Which is normal.
And then Dan, who is a river dragon in full control of her facilities from Journey to the West, not really from the Dresden Files.
Okay, Julie, I want to give you a chance because I stepped all over you.
No, it's fine.
She's a doormat.
My suggestion is, and I had this in the game I was running myself, is we had one player who hadn't read any of the books. He maybe got through half the first one. And
the first one is not a good introduction.
It's not, it's not that he just didn't have time. And so he really wanted to play the game and wanted to play with the fudge dice and the whole nine yards. I was like, okay, well, way we can do this is you make your character who doesn't understand anything. They have powers, or they're just a mundane human who happens to have stunts and the other things that they offer humans.
Right.
And they are kind of clueless about the universe, and you can actually learn from your other MP, other player characters.
That's how we are. Except none of us are mundanes.
Well, I know, but you guys at least know some stuff from what I talked to Chad about. This guy would be completely clueless. And he was. And it worked out great because he was a magician and didn't realize he was actually magical. And so once once he got involved with the group, he realized, oh, this is actually a thing, and slowly learns more.
I like that character concept a lot.
I think the hard part for me, because as much as I am in favor of sometimes hand-waving some things for the sake of the game, or saying, okay, let's just rewind it, that didn't happen, I think I have a personal quirk where the sudden ejection of internal consistency within my character and the history of what's happened would bug me to the point that I really am strongly leaning towards making a different character. And even if that means going back to one of my ruts, at least it would fit into the group better.
I would say as a GM...
And it would not contradict the mythos quite so harshly.
As a GM, I'm the type of person that I'm willing to roll with anything. So if you want to make a new character, I am perfectly cool with that. We will make a new character that fits in well with the group template. If you want to roll the character you've got, I love the personality of this character. The mythos of it gets a little bit difficult to work with, but the personality is great. The character itself is solitary enough that if this character disappeared from the perspective, I think, of the other players in the game, nobody would really question why this character isn't with the group helping out for the rest of the story.
And that's part of the problem, I guess.
And actually, the way the last game ended, this character has some personal issues to deal with at this point. Well,
and that's the one and only thing that I would put back on the rest of the group, because I put 90% of the blame on me. The only thing I would put back on the rest of the group is when I was making the character, I really asked for a lot of help in terms of understanding the group template and whatnot, understanding the interactions. And really, the only person actually paying attention to me was Wayne. Everybody else was kind of having their side chats and BSing around, and I really didn't get sufficient guidance to make a character that fit into the group. Because, I mean, from the character's description, none of the things that have come up, none of the things that have occurred should be surprising. They were all written in as aspects and described out in the characters, but nobody but Wayne was really paying attention. And so I feel like I didn't quite get enough guidance making a character, because I had no idea you guys were all just kind of these accidental, not really clear on what we are, and that I would really stick out as a sore thumb being the one character who was
in
the know.
Well, this is a secondary question. You didn't make your character at the same time all the rest of us did.
That creates a big burden
of care on everyone, and you're accurate to place at least some of the blame on the rest of us.
It is difficult in every game. It's more difficult in this particular one.
Yeah, because you make it together.
Because the system ties it together.
Yeah,
you make it all together.
In, not only do you create a group template inherently, you create the setting.
Yeah, you create the people, your antagonists, you do everything.
I'm not
going
to say I didn't have input in the city, but the city was created by everyone sitting at the table.
Yeah.
And now, so when the main plot isn't necessarily tied to everything the characters did around the table. There is a strong Native American aspect going. That was something no one at the table brought to the table. That was something I, as a GM, brought into the game.
Well, and it is really hard to bring a character into a Dresden Files game later, because the characters do find a way to tie themselves in their minds to the people that you create. Whereas when you're coming in later, almost have to shoehorn your way in to do that.
That's not limited to role-playing games. Try being the new person in a group of friends.
That's true.
It's the same way. You have to, and you do figure it out eventually.
New person in a job, new person in a group of friends.
I mean, it's no different, Wayne, than we first brought you into, you know, our current gaming group. You kind of had to figure out how to fit it.
Now, I was the outsider in my first game, definitely.
And as of now, you know, it's just Wayne. You know, you're like old hat, you're one of the crew, whatever. But there was a time, and I had the same thing. You know, I remember my first game with that group. I really had to figure out what to play, and it was really hard because they were playing a Deadlands game, and I just had to play a Confederate soldier, and I was trying to figure out what I could and couldn't get away with from a role-playing standpoint.
Well, and as an example, in my first game, it was a Skies of Glass game. I'm coming at this thinking based on what I know of role-playing video games.
Right.
So I knew nothing about role-playing games in general, but I knew even less about Skies of Glass. I had done a lot of research into it, but I came in as like, the group doesn't have a healer. I'll be a healer. Healer in Skies of Glass isn't the same as a healer in, say, D&D. There is no magic healing.
You don't do 2d8. You do, I think I amputated before the infection killed him.
Exactly. And I didn't know this coming in. I create a healer character not knowing I'm not going to have any kind of magic healing. I'm going to be a veterinarian because that amuses me to be a veterinarian.
You have bandages, a bone saw, needle, and thread.
I'm rolling to try to stabilize wounds. That wasn't something I realized coming into game, and my character never quite fit in with this group template. And part of that was, you know, I was coming in not knowing, I didn't know how old the characters were.
Right.
So I made my character too old. I gave my character too much history. He came in with a horse and everyone's like, why would he hang out with us? He has a horse. He's better than us.
Well, in our group, everybody's very quick to help create a character. So we generally don't have that kind of stuff happen, because when you come into a game and you're like, all right, I want to join this game, but what is everybody playing? What's going on? It is actually a group effort. Everybody is like, okay, well, we've got this hole we need to fill, but if you don't want to do that, that's fine. And it's very collaborative in our group of
ours
friends.
Ours normally is too. This was just kind of a misstep. And it's crazy.
Like I said, it's hard in Dresden anyway. Yeah. It really is.
And everyone was so excited to tell you about the city, but when we got around to the characters,
nobody talked.
Like,
yeah.
It's like everyone gave you, here is my core character concept. In John's case, I am a blood-sucking lawyer.
Yeah.
Nope. But we didn't get into the full history.
I got the class and race of everyone, but yeah. All right, well, I tell you what, we're going to see how this one plays out. We'll try to report back on what the solution is and how that works out.
Whatever direction you choose to go, Dan, I will support you and we will run with it. Because for me as a GM, I want the players to be happy.
Right.
And I'm the kind of GM that...
What kind of a GM are you?
I will generally say yes to just about anything when the players come to me, and we will work it out and we will find a way to make it work.
All right.
I will say yes if the question is, does the box trap kill me?
If you want a new character, we will build a new character.
We'll figure
something. If you want to make this character work, we will make this character work. Whichever makes you happier in game, we will find a way to make it work.
All right. Well, we'll figure something out. Like I said, we'll report back on this. It may not be next episode, because we actually may record a couple tonight. But one way or another, you guys are going to report back. As always, have a great week and wonderful games. We hope you also enjoy the 4th of July. And unless you're in another country, in which case the 4th of July didn't occur, you just skip from the 3rd to the 5th because we conquered that day. So thank you all for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Don't drive like my brother.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.